Thank you. May it please the court. There are four issues presented in the dispositive motions that have been briefed. Number one, did the state engineer err by disregarding controlling precedent, refusing to hold an evidentiary hearing on the merits of the 2014 application, and denying Augustine's request for a post-decision hearing? Number two, did the state engineer improperly allow piecemeal litigation in violation of the Lionsgate case by partitioning the issue of speculation for separate consideration without considering the other issues? Number three, did the state engineer err by disregarding the evidence and finding that there were no facts in dispute on the issue of speculation? And number four, in light of the information in the application and the Mathers case, was the state engineer correct in holding that the 2014 application is administratively complete and valid? And I'll start there, Your Honor. In 2002, this court dismissed Augustine's prior application because it didn't contain a specific plan and because it identified every possible use with anywhere within five counties. Augustine took that guidance to heart. It worked with the state engineer. It made a significant effort to address the issues raised by the court and of the state engineer. For example, rather than all possible purposes of use, the 2014 application includes only two. To address the issue of a specific plan, Augustine provided an unprecedented level of information. The application is 162 pages. It contains a project description, including a description of the demand. It includes an engineering drawing of the well location and piping layout, a mile-by-mile depiction of the pipeline route, information on cultural, historical, and biological resources along the pipeline, investor letters showing financial feasibility, detailed description of the place of use, sample letters from a municipality illustrating demand, sample forms of agreement with end users, a conceptual engineering design, hydraulic analysis, description of how the energy would be used, and an illustration of the lateral alignments where the end users will take water. In short, it provided a detailed plan that shows how the water will be used from cradle to grave. It's not an exaggeration to say that this application contains more information than any application ever submitted to the state engineer. On summary judgment, the state engineer confirmed that he considered the 2014 application to be complete and valid. But despite that and the extensive information, the protesters claim that the 2014 application needs even more information. And really, they're raising three issues. The first is that the protestants claim that the 2014 application is deficient because it doesn't identify the specific end users or where that water will be used by those end users or how much water will go to each of the end users. This argument, though, has been foreclosed by the Supreme Court in the Mathers case, where they made a remarkably similar claim. There, the protestants argued that the application at issue was facially deficient because it, quote, sought to appropriate water from the underground water basin in gross and failed to set forth a specific industry water, industry entity or owner for which and in which the water rights sought to be appropriated to invest. That argument was rejected by the New Mexico Supreme Court, who said, again, this is a quote, certainly there is nothing in our law which requires that an application to appropriate public waters for beneficial use must be made by or in the names of all persons who may ultimately use or be benefited by such use. The Mathers Court went on to also caution courts that the legislature has determined exactly what information ought to go into an application, and that the courts were not at liberty to expand that information. The second issue raised by the protestants is that the purposes of use are not defined sufficiently. As I said, though, there are only two purposes of use in this application. Number one is municipal, and number two is commercial sales. Both are long recognized purposes of use. The third argument that the protestants raise is that the place of use is not defined specifically. Again, unlike the 2007 application, the place of use is defined with much specificity. The water for municipal uses will be used within those six municipalities that are defined both by statute and by the service area and by the state engineer's permits that applies to each of those municipalities. The water for commercial sales will be used along the pipeline route, and as I said, there is a detailed mile-by-mile depiction of exactly where that route is, including the lateral alignment where the water will be taken for beneficial use. And in fact, all of this followed precisely the information that the state engineer told Augustine that it needed to include in the application. If you recall, there's an attachment to Mr. Jasielinski's affidavit that indicates the state engineer said exactly what should be included. To overcome this, the protestants raised arguments about res judicata and collateral estoppel. Four problems with this argument, and I won't go into them in detail, they're brief. Number one, these are materially different applications. Number two, it's a materially different procedural posture. We're on summary judgment. We're dealing with a post-decision request for hearing. We are not dealing with a motion to dismiss for the application being facially valid because the state engineer found that this application is complete. We're dealing with materially different issues, whether an evidentiary hearing is required if an application is complete, whether the action of the state engineer violated the Lionsgate progeny and its progeny or the Derringer line of cases, and whether did the undisputed facts show that the 2014 application is speculative. All issues were not raised in the previous briefing, a previous case. And finally, the court and the state engineer both specified that Augustine was entitled to submit a new application. It was without prejudice, and that's precisely what we've done. Moving on then to the next issue, which is whether the state engineer erred by depriving Augustine of a full evidentiary hearing. Really, there's two issues here, whether Augustine is entitled to an evidentiary hearing and then the scope of the hearing, whether or not the state engineer properly partitioned out a single issue. Starting with the whether Augustine is entitled to an evidentiary hearing, controlling precedent requires the state engineer to conduct an evidentiary hearing, and really there's three precedents that the court is bound to follow: Derringer, D'Antonio, and Lionsgate, which were decided in that order. Like the present case, each of those cases arose in the context of a summary judgment. And I'll describe each of those cases and how they apply here, but I think it's instructive to first talk a little bit about the statutory scheme which those cases relied on. The first is 7212.3, and particularly 7212.3F, which does indicate that the state engineer has the ability to dismiss or deny an application without a hearing. Despite what the protestants are suggesting, we do not deny that that is the authority that the state engineer has. However, that you then have to look to 7212.16 and 7212.17 and provide further information about that. And what those statutes say, and the cases confirm, is that under 7212.16, an applicant or a party has not exhausted their administrative remedies unless and until a hearing is held. That's the language of the statute. And if a decision is made by the state engineer without a hearing, then there is the opportunity for a post-decision hearing. Again, very clear in the case law, very clear in that statute. And then 7212.17 tells you, well, what kind of hearing is required? It's provided there in that statute. You have an opportunity to present witnesses, exhibits, evidence, cross-examination. In short, it's a full evidentiary hearing. So with that as background, I'll turn then to Derringer. And in that case, the state engineer granted summary judgment to the protestant, did not hold an evidentiary hearing. Derringer, like Augustine here, requested a post-decision hearing, which the state engineer denied. After considering the statutory scheme, the Court of Appeals held that the plain language of the Water Code, quote, guarantees an aggrieved party one hearing. That's in paragraph 13. The state engineer in Derringer, just as he does here, argued that the summary judgment motion satisfied the requirement for a hearing because part of the evidence could be submitted in written form. The court rejected this contention and held that summary judgment, again, this is a quote, does not satisfy the requirements clearly set forth in the statute. That's paragraph 15. 8 years later in D'Antonio, the Court of Appeals had another opportunity to comment on the Derringer case. In that case, it was enforcement proceeding arising under the Chapter 72, Article 2. And in case there was any ambiguity about the type of hearing that was required under Derringer, that was answered in D'Antonio. There again, the state engineer had issued summary judgment. This time, there was no request for a post-decision hearing. D'Antonio addressed the question of whether a comprehensive hearing is required in state engineer proceedings. And the court went on to describe the Derringer case, and it described the holding like this. It said the state engineer had erred in Derringer because, quote, instead of conducting a full evidentiary hearing, the state engineer granted summary judgment to one party in a water appropriation dispute. The court went on to say that, quote, the right to a hearing granted by Section 7212.16 is a procedural right that is intended to ensure that the state engineer affords the appropriate degree of process to the parties before a final decision is entered. The process to be forwarded in that conduct of the hearing, the court makes clear is provided pursuant to 72-217. That case leaves no doubt that if a post-decision is requested, and again, the quote is, a full evidentiary hearing is required. The state engineer argues that the summary judgment hearing, the motions hearing, was the hearing that was provided by 72-217. There's three problems with that. The first is Derringer does say that summary judgment motions is proceedings are simply not enough to satisfy that hearing requirement. D'Antonio, as I said, goes on to require, quote, a full evidentiary hearing, and then I've already talked about the specific statutory provisions of 72-217, which require the opportunity to cross-examine, et cetera. The state engineer and the protestants also argue that there's been a, quote, long established practice of the state engineer entertaining summary judgment proceedings, and it would be inefficient if it were not able to continue to do so. Again, that is foreclosed by the Derringer and Lionsgate decisions. In Derringer, they say that summary judgment is not an appropriate way to resolve that case, or rather, I should say, is not a way to afford the hearing if one is requested. Lionsgate makes clear that what the legislature actually intended was for the state engineer to utilize his or her expertise in water to address all of the issues having to do with a water application. And really, in Lionsgate, it makes clear that that is an issue of efficiency, because the court there was concerned about piecemeal litigation and the problem of bouncing back and forth between the administrative body and the court, and that it would be much more efficient to simply require the state engineer deal with all of those issues first one time, use your expertise, and then it would come back up to the court. And finally, there's the Albuquerque cab case, which the briefing is provided in the papers. Turning then to the issue of speculation and the piecemeal piece, Lionsgate addressed the argument from the applicant that unless the district court obtained jurisdiction over all the issues, again, this is a quote, the state engineer would have authority to consider an application to appropriate piecemeal, forcing an applicant to appeal each issue individually. And the court acknowledged the potential problem of if every issue relevant to a water right application, quote, could be partitioned by the state engineer and litigated in isolation. But the court went on to hold the water code doesn't allow that. Other than the single threshold issue of availability of water, the court held that, quote, the state engineer must consider the full merits of an application and every constituent issue. To see that the state engineer violated that principle, you need only look at the issues that are before you. The state engineer acknowledges, as it must, that Lionsgate stands for the principle that only the issues decided by the state engineer are actually before the court. Here, the scheduling issue, which is in the administrative record, contains the issues that need to be addressed, and those issues are also within the statute. Those include impairment, conservation, and public welfare. However, none of those issues were actually addressed by the state engineer, and therefore it did not consider the full merits of an application. Instead, the state engineer partitioned out the single issue of speculation, did not consider any other issues, and made a ruling based on that issue alone, so that if the court decides that a hearing was required or that the facts preclude summary judgment, it can't go back and decide any of those additional issues, and a remand is required, thereby requiring that exact procedural morass, that piecemeal litigation that the court in Lionsgate said was not allowed. And then finally, turning to the issue of the issue of facts over speculation, a reminder, summary judgment, not an opportunity to weigh the evidence, and the court must view the facts in the light most favorable to the party opposing the motion, draw all reasonable inferences from that. The state engineer protestants argued that, or really what the state engineer found, I should say, was that summary judgment was warranted because the application was speculative. There was no dispute over the material facts, and it was speculative. But there's no effort in the briefing, other than from Augustine, to define what speculation is or to offer the standard that must be applied, which of course is necessary for summary judgment. both of those should be done by this court. To begin with, in defining the definition of speculation, we can rely on four clearly defined principles from New Mexico law. Sale is a beneficial use. It is not necessary to identify the specific end user of water. Appropriations may be made for the future use of another entity, and the relation back doctrine allows a party to proceed with due diligence to complete its appropriation. The cases say that speculation really applies when putting the water to beneficial use is a mere afterthought, and the applicant's intention is simply to grab the water, hold on to it, not put the water to beneficial use, and in the words of the cases, act like a dog in the manger. The corollary to that principle, of course, is that if a party is acting with due diligence or intends to put the water to beneficial use, is moving to put that water to beneficial use, an application is not speculative. And the protestants and state engineer argue for sort of we're not going to apply a specific standard, we'll just know speculation when we see it. But as we can see in this case, that's not good enough. We need some specific definition, hopefully from this court. There are three standards that are discussed both by the court in its 2012 decision as well as in the papers and the state engineer's decision. Those are whether or not the applicant has a bona fide intent, whether the facts show that the water can and will be put to beneficial use with due diligence, and whether or not there is a specific plan, which I'll mention gained specific recognition both in your 2002 order, where you emphasized the requirement of a specific plan, as well as in the state engineer's decision below. Here, the facts have a marked imbalance towards one side, and that side is to Augustine. There are 162 pages to the application. There are two affidavits with very specific information showing exactly how that water will be put to use, the steps that have been taken by Mr. Bishlinski. There's very little evidence on the other side. So moving to each one of those, if you talk about the intent to put the water to beneficial use, I think we can look to this idea that Augustine has invested $4 million in developing this project. It has developed hydrographic studies, engineering studies. It has negotiated with numerous end users. All of this is uncontested. On the can and will, again, there is very specific information. There are numerous studies that have been done on every facet of this project. In the papers, we point to a case in Colorado where the fact that there were engineering studies, hydrologic studies done as it's sufficient to establish the can and will standard. And finally, the specific plan I outlined earlier, the many ways that Augustine has provided cradle-to-grave information about this particular plan. In fact, if you look at the record, the state engineer has recognized several ways in which the facts do support Augustine. In fact, in its order, paragraph 68, the state engineer recognized that the letters from Rio Rancho, quote, evinces the city of Rio Rancho's possible future use of the applied for water rights. The state engineer in its briefing indicates that the state that Augustine has certainly shown a subjective intent to put the water to beneficial use. It says in its order below that there's an intent, it shows an intent to provide water to municipalities. It indicates that in the order below that the state that Augustine quote invested significant time and resources into conceptual development of a project. And in its briefing below, the Water Rights Division actually said this at page 11. That is, quote, the application goes to great lengths to satisfy many of the questions that might arise from the specific plan and the can and will test. All of that is more than enough to survive summary judgment. The protestants' arguments here are that, let me first say that in its briefing, the state engineer self-consciously admits that what the state engineer did and what's going on here is that it, quote, weighed the evidence. That is something that they say in their briefing. Another comes from one of their headings where they say that certain evidence did not overcome other evidence, which of course is simply a weighing process that's not allowed at summary judgment. We can see from the factors test that the state engineer presents that involves a sort of crediting certain evidence over other evidence, which is not allowed. And we can see from the issues as they are articulated by the protestants, for example, Catherine County at page 11 of their brief says that what the court will have to decide, quote, is, quote, whether municipalities or commercial users are actually interested in contracting to use the water. But of course, we know from Mr. Jishlinski's affidavit, there is significant demand and interest. He has had significant negotiations, and there is a high degree of confidence that all of those, that the end users will be contracting for water once there is a permit granted. Similarly, the state engineer says, defines the issue as, quote, whether the applicant will in fact place the water to beneficial use within a reasonable time. Again, a very fact-specific inquiry. These are all inherently factual issues. It's not credible to say that there's not evidence on the other side showing the intent to put the water to beneficial use, that the water can and will be put to beneficial use, or that there's a specific plan. The state engineer may ultimately not agree that there's enough to grant a permit, but certainly that must survive summary judgment. And finally, there's not really a concern that the water will not be put to beneficial use, because as testified to by Mr. Jishlinski, there is every expectation and there's a practice, and in fact, the regulations that we cite in our papers, that permits are granted subject to the requirement of proving up the beneficial use within a specific time, which we certainly expect will happen here. In short, any one of those issues requires this court to remand the case back to the state engineer for a full evidentiary hearing. Thank you.
How much time do you have left?